Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening on Amazon Music is included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Just head to amazon.com/adfreetruecrime to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Enjoy thousands of Acast shows ad-free for Prime subscribers. Some shows may have ads.
Welcome to your daily affirmations. Repeat after me. Working with others is easier than ever. I strive for perfect collaboration. Our teamwork keeps getting better. Yeah, affirmations are great, but Monday.com can really get you the teamwork you desire. Work together easily and share files, updates, data, and just about anything you want all in one platform. Affirm yes to start. Or tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
We acknowledge the Yuggera and Kaurna nations as traditional custodians of the land on which we work, live and learn, and their continuing connection with the land, waters and community. We pay our respects to them and their elders past and present.
All content related to this program is for general informational purposes only and contains stories and discussions around mental health that may be disturbing to some listeners. If you are concerned about yourself or someone you know, please seek professional individual advice and support. More details are contained in our show notes.
Last time on Reframe of Mind, we explored depression, having taken inspiration from 2021 Queensland Australian of the Year, Dinesh Palapana.
I've had the benefit of being able to compare both experiences. Yeah, I can safely say that depression is far more debilitating than spinal cord injury has been.
Something else that was prominent in Dinesh's story was his decision to back himself to become a doctor instead of a lawyer after having become quadriplegic due to a car accident.
He knew from the core of his soul, even in the face of people encouraging him to take another path, that being a doctor is what he really wanted.
This was his truth, and he persisted. I'm Louise Poole.
And I'm Andy Leroy. And this is Reframe of Mind.
The series that cuts through the platitudes and gets to the core of living authentically, challenging our assumptions and improving mental health, with the guidance of good science, philosophy, and learning from other people's lived experiences. Someone else we've met who learned at a young age to back herself and speak her truth is CEO and founder at Le Joie Scheme Pty Ltd, Daphne Kapitis.
Daphne enjoys taking up things purely for the sake of enjoying a hobby. When we first spoke to her, one of her hobbies was learning how to manoeuvre acrobatic rings in midair.
Daphne's father died when she was studying for her HSC. She's a big supporter of reframing to improve life and, as a scientist, has explored evidence of it working in case studies and in her own life.
Daphne is a businesswoman with heart, which she puts at the centre of everything she does. She finds the joy in life, shares her profits, and cares for the community.
As we're both sitting here trying to shape our own what now empire, Daphne was like a tonic to soothe our wounded and ambitious souls.
I want people to get the most out of life because I realise how fragile life is. Like, I know how fragile life is.
You've taken up some interesting hobbies over the years. What's the latest one that you've taken up?
So the latest one is this new gym that's opened up and we're doing rings, like we're doing some acrobatic rings. So I'm trying to, you know, do my objective is to try and skin the cat. So I'm having so much fun that I think I spend 1 hour giggling all the way through it, which disrupts the rest of the class. But then they get their surge of happy hormones too, looking at me and my several attempts, which I've actually got on my story today. And it's already had so many people laughing, thinking, but you know what, I didn't give up and in the end I got it.
What happens when you skin the cat? Do you go through a ring?
So you go through the ring, so you're holding, so number one, it's not, you wouldn't be able to.
There's no cats involved?
There's no cats involved. No, there's no cats involved. No cats involved. There's no cruelty towards animals. We love all living creatures. No, this is basically you hold the rings and you attempt to go upside down, but you attempt to do a little twirl around. So I've managed to be able to do the backward roll, but I can't do the forward roll. I mean, basically every year I give myself, and I've done this since I can remember, since, you know, my early 20s, after I finished my first degree and I found, you know, that I needed to be challenged, I would set myself goals, and I'd have academic goals that I wanted to achieve, and I'd have extracurricular activities that I wanted to achieve. And I made sure that I would meet them. So I would check myself, like a marketeer does, every quarter. How am I tracking? So in my, you know, early 20s, I jumped out of a plane because I did have a fear of heights, and I had just finished reading this fabulous book, which I adore, called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. So it's okay to feel the fear and to acknowledge that you have a fear, or acknowledge that you're feeling a certain amount of anxiety about something. And then I decided to jump out of a plane.
I think I could go that far myself.
Well, I'm sure you could if you wanted to. I had another chemist who I was working with at the time, and he would go down every weekend down to Picton and do that. And so I thought, you know what, why not? Let's go. Let's go and do this. But I was also lucky that I didn't have anybody around me, like, to stop me from doing this type of thing. So I had a mum who was very encouraging. She never told me that being a female or being a certain age, it was a problem. I wasn't aware that, like, I suppose I was so focused on achieving my goals and getting the most out of life that I don't allow myself to be consumed by my environment, in terms of in my industry, I never felt that I was less than a male. I never got paid less than a male, but I made sure that I was valued. Because I had two parents who were very much into believing in me, I didn't feel that I couldn't achieve.
So do you think that that is a belief that directly has come from the environment that you grew up in, from a supportive family?
Yeah, I do. And I absolutely do. So it wasn't like, you know, and my heritage is Greek. And my, you know, my mum was born in 1933. My dad was born in 1936. But they were early adopters. They were people who didn't say to me, you need to get married, you have to have kids. They didn't have these preconceived ideas or prejudices about other human beings. I never heard my parents ever speak negatively about anyone. They weren't into gossip. So I do believe that my parents had a lot to do with my self-belief.
Would you say that's different from what was, I suppose, the cultural norm for people in your community at the time?
Absolutely. But it wasn't just the cultural norm, because I was born and raised on the northern beaches of Sydney, where I was the only one of Greek background in the whole school. So it wasn't until I went to university that I saw other people that looked like me. And at the time I had 11 letters to my surname, which was Demetriadis. And that was, you know, quite challenging for a lot of people of Anglo background to be able to pronounce. But the thing was, it wasn't just a cultural thing. I think it's just in general. I mean, as women, we see today some of the situations that other women are facing in terms of the prejudices against gender. And I sit back and I reflect and I think, I don't ever remember my parents ever saying to me that I couldn't do it because I was a girl, ever.
I like that concept of, I just want to come back to, you made the comment that your parents weren't at all into gossip. And I know that, you know, gossip is something that's quite prevalent in society. In any workplace, you find gossip very easily. It sounds to me like that is actually obviously something that drove you, or actually contributed to the positive way you see yourself and put yourself out there.
Absolutely, because they never compared. They never said to me, look what so-and-so is doing and why aren't you doing that? They never did that. They never drew comparisons against what anybody else was doing. We never read magazines like, oh, look at the cellulite on that woman, or so-and-so just did, like, it wasn't a conversation that we had. Yeah. It was make sure that you do the right thing by the people and the living creatures around you, respect the living creatures and be charitable. So without even knowing it, us from a very young age, we were always taught to be able to, as people that were privileged, my parents saw themselves as privileged, you know, living in Australia, were privileged. And so consequently, they believed that it was our duty to protect the vulnerable. That too meant, like, as in, if you take a look at the scientific research behind that, when I reflect back now with my science brain and with all the research, every time you do something charitable and you help someone else altruistically without a ulterior motive, you are actually, in fact, helping yourself. It's a win-win. You actually, they've done research on this and they found that when you put people into a soup kitchen and they test, they take swabs out of their saliva and they test for cortisol, the stress hormone, then they test for serotonin, the happy hormone, they find that after you've spent some time in a soup kitchen, they found that your cortisol, your stress hormone drops and your happy hormone increases. So I think holistically as a family, because their mindset was focus, making sure that you've got your home in order first before you start pointing the finger at other people.
I love that they had that attitude. What?
Oh, so do I. I love that.
Like when we're setting the picture, what era is this?
Well, this is, so I was born in 1966, so it was the 70s. So when there was, you know, quite a bit of racism on the northern beaches of Manly, bearing in mind, you know, black hair, 11 letters to my surname. One thing I adored about my parents is that when I'd come home and I had felt really like bullied badly, they never ever blamed anyone. Their attitude was, Daphne, they don't know you. When they get to know you, they will love you. They're just coming from a position of ignorance and fear, but once they get to know you, they will love you. So I never retaliated.
Yeah.
Some people might think that's silly of me, and I reflect
that
back now.
How hard was that for you, though, to actually be in receipt of what you were receiving? But
oh, it was real
fighting back.
Well, it was I don't know if it's a personality thing or if the way I was trained. I didn't fight back, and I remember one thing which, you know, okay. So my father died in the middle of my HSC, end of year 11. He left a mother that was quite ill, and she wasn't allowed to go to school where she lived in Greece because my grandmother had 17 births. She had her last child at 55.
Wow.
So my mum, being the eldest female, wasn't allowed to go to school because she had to look after all the siblings. Hence why my parents believe that education is power. Education's a power. So one thing that they did reiterate was, as a female, you find freedom, especially when you are educated. That's where you get your power, through the love of learning. So reflecting on that, when he passed away, which was quite dark at the end of year 11, and back then we didn't have provisions, we didn't have, you know, what we have today. I remember sitting on the bus at Manly, where the Manly Beach is, and going towards Seaforth, where my family home was. And one of the boys from the opposite schools, male schools, came up to me and started chanting, Daphne, how's your father? How's your father, Daph? How's your father? He did it for 45 minutes. I sat there and I did nothing. I just looked at him and I breathed, because breathing is full on empowering. I lowered my breathing, visualized that I was on a dance floor. I visualized my movements because I was performing. He was bullying me and taunting me, but you know what? In my head, I was dancing on stage. I had the audience clapping. I had sweat pouring down my face from the amount of dancing I did. So by the time we got to Seaforth, I got off the bus, went into the home, closed the door, and that's where I cried.
Yeah.
When I told that to my mum, she said to me, forgive him, he doesn't know what he's doing. The day will come that he'll regret that. Be the bigger person and don't retaliate. A lot of people think that's crazy. How did you do that? But I did, because I visualised that I was somewhere else. Other times I visualised I had a raincoat on, and when people would spew out their toxins to me, I felt that the raincoat was protecting me. I was using the power of visualisation. And then once they stopped, I would take off my raincoat and wash it out. How many years on, 10, 15 years on from that, the fact that I did not retaliate made me super successful in business. It meant that when I was working for Bayer and there was an issue happening anywhere, they would say, Daphne, you need to go into China and you need to sort this out. Daphne, you need to go to Melbourne tomorrow and sort this situation out, because I didn't take it personally. Mm-hmm. So it might have been pretty difficult at that point in time to do that, but it's taught me a lot in terms of resilience. I don't need to react, but I have the control. And that's why I'm saying to you, that was like, you know, I was 16 at the time. That was 1982.
Yeah.
And you can imagine how gutted I was at that time, but I didn't allow him to see my pain. And I remember mum saying to me, don't ever let them see your pain. Do not let them see your pain. They may take joy out of that, but do not retaliate. And that's the reason why I've said before that I do the things that I do because I'm wearing my raincoat. And if you laugh at me and if you think I'm an idiot, I really don't care. Because I'm not hurting you, unless it's, if I'm hurting you, if I'm doing something where I'm being toxic to you, that's a different story. But if I'm not hurting you, then why should your opinion of me count?
it might seem to an outsider that hasn't heard the whole story that by not acting, you're not empowered because you're ignoring it. But by visualizing and placing the raincoat on, it's a very powerful empowering act that you're doing, because you're placing yourself first and setting up those boundaries to say that no one's opinion besides your own is what matters, even when they're standing there spewing at you awful things on a bus ride.
I find that empowering. And again, yeah. I'm not going to allow anybody to make me hate them.
Yeah.
And my mum would say that to me too. There's ancient Greek sayings that say whether somebody hates you or they love you, what you don't want is for them to like feel sorry for you, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Because whether someone hates you or not, it's really not your opinion. It's not our business.
But okay, and what they say about me is also none of my business.
Yeah.
Okay, at the end of the day, if you don't like me, seriously, switch off. Don't listen. Okay, walk away. Don't say hello to me. But I am not going to allow you to make me feel negative towards you. It doesn't matter what you do to me. I will not allow myself to feel, because I don't want to feel, I just want joy. I want every morning to wake up and feel happy. And it doesn't mean to say that every day I feel happy. There are days that I don't feel happy, and I'm okay with that. And if you ask me, I'll tell you the truth. I'm not feeling very happy today, but then I have a toolbox of things that I go to when I'm not feeling happy, a toolbox. And I have an array of things that I do to pick myself up.
Yeah, I love that you've actually empowered yourself with those things that have happened to you, and also not given power to those people. Mm. And you know, you've turned that into success for yourself. I want to come back to what you were saying about your education as well, because you mentioned that you did your first degree, which kind of hints to me that you might have done another one.
Well, I have. So my first degree is, so I wanted to be a fashion designer or a dancer or a singer. I wanted to leave in year 10. I wasn't very good at maths. Back then, they believed in fixed mind state, that I was a creative and I could draw, but my maths was really not okay.
Yep.
But then in year 11 and year 12, I had studied chemistry, biology and textiles and designs, because of course I had done work experience with Carla Zampatti, and that's what I wanted to do. My mum was a designer. I want to be a designer. But my love of chemistry and my curious mind meant that in the end I did a degree, a pure and applied chemistry degree at UTS. Now at the time when I walked in there, because bearing in mind, you know, I'm a dancer, I want to perform. Mm. I love fashion. I'd walk in there with red suits, red nail polish and black hair, and they used to call me the nanny, of course. Okay.
Awful.
Right? Awful. But like the nanny. You know the nanny? Did you remember the nanny on television?
Yeah.
Okay.
You think a friend.
Right? Which is fine. I didn't care, right?
Yeah.
But the lecturers were like, you know, you don't look like a scientist. You don't conduct yourself like a scientist. You need to wear safety shoes. You're wearing high heels. Okay, so you know what? They won the safety shoe debate. Yes, they did. Mm. I ended up wearing safety shoes in the labs, but I didn't take off my flamboyant red suits. In the end, I would give them my assignments and they'd say, oh, you know, who helped you do that? Because they assumed that being the way I was, that I didn't have brains. Do you see these prejudices? It's silly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I didn't fit in the scientific norm. It's just silly. It's limiting on their part, not on mine. But in the end, and I remember once there was a subject called reaction kinetics, which is physics and chemistry. And one of the guys next to me said, oh, you know, you'll never pass this one. It's a 15% pass rate. Now, that is enough to drive me mad, okay? Tell me that I can't do something. And I go, thank you for that. That's exactly what I needed. I needed you to tell me that I can't do that. Now, watch me. Now, I never go back to the people. I never go back to these people to say, gee, thanks for that. Because of you, I got 95%. And I remember the lecturer walking in saying, Daphne Dimitriadis, reaction kinetics, stand up, 95%. I blitzed it. I couldn't believe it. But I never told anybody that behind the scenes my brain was hemorrhaging from, like, okay. But it's like any performer. No performer tells you how hard the rehearsals were.
Mm.
When you go and watch somebody perform, you're mesmerized by what they are doing, how they're entertaining you, how they're taking you to a different place. It's exactly the same thing. They don't sit back telling you just how hard this was to make this performance look as great as what it was. The same was this. I didn't tell anybody. So when I finished from UTS and my science degree, the first year I worked as a chemist for Avon, which was quite a big skincare beauty company at that time. And then after a year, I was offered a positioning lecturing chemistry at university to the engineers. And again, I didn't change. They actually also made me student representative. And I never changed to fit into their norm of what a scientist is supposed to look like. And then a few years later, I did buying for Avon, and then I was becoming a product manager in marketing. They started paying for my Master of Business in Marketing. So I ended up doing a Master of Business in Marketing in my late 20s. And then later on, when I got married and had kids at 43, when my daughter was at kindy and my son was at preschool, I went to Adelaide, the University of Adelaide, and did a graduate certificate in sustainability.
That's incredible. Mm. I'm really interested in that phase as well, because I can already hear so many things that people would say to themselves to put themselves off. I've got mum brain. I've been out of this for so long.
I'm
in my 40s. What are the things that you were telling yourself as you were starting this new...
Well, again, because... So what I did was... So when I finished my master's, I ended up working in the fragrance industry, so a division of Roche and a division of Bayer, where they create the fragrances that go into your product. So from your fine fragrance, like your Prada, your Valentino, they don't make the fragrance, we do. So I would travel around the world creating these beautiful fragrances from, you know, your aftershave to Roland deodorants in Paris, or soap bars in Jakarta, Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo in China. So every, you know, a few days I would be traveling. It was a fantastic job. So at 35, I get married, which was something that I hadn't planned for. My parents never told me that, you know, I needed to get married. I was having a great career, but, you know, the right person came along, and I do believe in that. The right person did come along. After 3 months, he proposed, all done, right? So at 37, 38, 38, 39, I had two kids, and I was bored. My husband encouraged me. He said to me, you know what, how about you go and do something environmental? So I thought, you know what, that's a great idea. So I, at the time, the University of Adelaide came up with this course. It was the first course of its kind in the Southern Hemisphere, and I enrolled. Now, I've gone down there now, bearing in mind I'm 43. Now, these are university students who are, what are they, 18, 19, 20?
Mm-hmm.
When I first walked in there, the lecturer was amazing. She was a science lawyer and she was 30. Did I feel a bit intimidated? I'm going to have to think that really carefully through. I probably did. I don't believe in mother's brains. I don't believe in that at all. And I think that's probably my science training that thinks that's just ridiculous. I'm not telling myself that negativity, because the brain doesn't know the difference between reality and what you tell it. So I'm telling my brain it can do anything. And my brain goes, sure, you know what, Daff, you know best. And then when the brain says, yeah, you know what, she knows best, it starts producing different hormones. So if I am going to do a presentation and I know I'm 43 and I look so much older than an 18-year-old, I don't focus on the way I'm looking to them. I focus on learning my content. So I'm standing up there now in front of all these young students. And yes, I'm a mum, and I have a mother who's dementing. She had just been, this was just before her diagnosis of frontal temporal dysfunction of the brain, so it wasn't great time for me. But I was focused on getting my content right, focused on me, focus on your own stroke. So when you are rowing, you focus on your own stroke, and that's how you propel forward. When you're on a bike and you're cycling, you have to focus on where you're going, because if you don't, you fall off. So like all the different activities that I've done where as a dancer, when you're performing in a group, you have to focus on your routine. I can't focus on what someone else is doing. I can see you from a peripheral vision, peripheral, but I'm not going to look at you front on. So I stood up in front of everybody, a lot older than all of them, and I focused on my content. My personality came out and I did well. So, you know, I think it's a matter of saying, I've only got one life. I'm going to make sure that I live it each day. And like I said, my goal every day is to be happy. And my happiness comes from setting myself goals and wanting to learn something new. I mean, I'm basically addicted to dopamine. Dopamine is the hormone which is produced in your brain when you try something new and you get excited over it, you know, like the rings that I'm doing now.
What's going through your mind when you're learning the rings?
Oh, I just think it's funny. because again, but you see, the other thing is I'm not competitive. So because I'm not competitive, like I'm not competing against you, I don't care like whether you come first or you come second or you've got a trophy, I'm trying to beat my personal best. So for me, when I'm doing the rings, I'm not absorbed in what the others are doing or how they're looking at me. I'm into my own body. Now, some that might sound a bit, I don't know, vain. Does it sound vain? Does it sound self-centered? It's I'm trying to live the best me, the best version of me.
I think that comes back to the things you'll hear often when you take a yoga class or if you're doing a Buddhist meditation, they always say don't compare yourself to other people because everyone's on their own journey.
That's exactly right. And I think it goes back to what we talked about before. My parents did not tell me, oh, what so-and-so is doing or what so-and-so are going to say about you. Or, you know, do I have an opinion on what Meghan Markle and the royal family? I don't have an opinion. I don't have an opinion on what some celebrity is doing. I don't have an opinion on what you're doing. As long as you're not affecting my life, why should I care whether you like sushi or not? As long as I don't bother you and my behaviours aren't hurting you in any way and my words are nurturing and inspiring to you, then why should I involve myself in what somebody else is doing? And so I think that there is the critical point. The fact that if we just focus on what we need to do to keep happy, because then you create a domino effect. So, you know, I read this fantastic book in 1995 called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yeah.
At that time, I was studying my master's. I was going for a job at Roche. So I've read it again as a mum. There's a version of it for kids, Seven Habits of Happy Kids. The habits are the same. But basically, it's a matter of me trying to get the best version of me. So one of the rules in the book was, one of the habits was, begin with the end in mind, alpha and omega, which is the first letter of the Greek alphabet and the last one. What do you want to achieve at the end of a day? What do you want achieved at the end of your a quarter? Whether it be in your professional life or whether it be in your social life, what do you want said on your tombstone? This was 1995, and at that time, it was clear to me in my late 20s that I want on my tombstone to say, Daphne inspired people, that I wanted people to, every time they came across my path, that they felt joy within themselves. So I have to live like that every day if that's what I want said on my tombstone. It's got nothing to do with how many degrees I've got or how much money I earn. It's got to do with how did I make you feel? And I believe that if I am to achieve that goal, then you have to be happy within you, Andy, and you have to be happy within you, Louise, because then it creates a domino effect. And scientists have proved that anyway, that our environment, the ancient Greeks also say, tell me with who you hang around with and I'll tell you what you are. So if you're hanging around with people that are toxic, it'll rub off. I don't enter conversations when people gossip, for example. You know, I won't do it. You will not drag me into it. If I see things on social media that I don't like, if I have nothing good to say, I will say nothing. I won't go into, well, you know what? That's not true. Those stretch mark creams don't work. It's BS.
It's that amazing ability that we have to just keep on scrolling.
That's it.
We don't have to comment on everything.
We don't have to comment on
negative
anything.
Opinions.
No, we don't have to. It's like, and that doesn't mean to say that I want, like, if you ask me, I will, you know, if you ask me, I will give you my opinion. But I'm not going to dive into your feed and tell you that what you're doing is wrong. It's none of my business.
Because that book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, I love that book.
Oh, it's one of my best.
The big thing that I always took away from that and remembered was the relationship bank, which is that you know, basically invest points with people and you keep building this positive relationship, and so much as that you never withdraw more points than what you've earned, then people will almost always be favourable to you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's. I think it's, if I had to, and that's why I'm saying it as in from 1995 till now, 2021, if I had to make one book compulsory, it would have to be
that book.
Oh, well, I love it. I think it's fantastic. And it's so easy to, you know, begin with the end in mind, create a win-win. You know, it's not a matter of, and I remember, you know, being a buyer and negotiating with suppliers. And it wasn't, you know, I'm big, powerful, Avon, and you're like absolutely nothing, so you're going to do what I say. It doesn't win because at one stage that supplier is going to go, you're just too hard and I'm not going to work with you. So whether it be in a business relationship, I always try to find a win-win so that people, so everybody feels that they're getting, and it just means that we need to compromise. You know, compromise is a beautiful thing. It doesn't mean, but it depends on what it is, right? So I won't compromise my values. But when it comes to trying to meet in the middle, I don't think that's such a difficult thing to do, even though some people find it difficult to do. I think it's important to respect the other person's needs too.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite show? Good news. Ad-free listening on Amazon Music is included with your Prime membership. Download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/adfreesports. That's amazon.com/adfreesports to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Enjoy thousands of Acast shows ad-free for Prime members. Some shows may have ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The start of every year brings tons of pressure to work out, and it stops some people from even starting. But starting is what matters most. That's why Peloton's made it easy to start with 2 months free all-access membership with your Peloton Bike or Bike Plus purchase. Start moving with thousands of classes with instructors ready to support you from day one. Shop Peloton's limited-time offer at onepeloton.com/deals. All-access membership separate. Terms apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So what would be your definition of success? Because it's not about money and it's not about accolades.
Well, I know it's not about money and accolades because my father had, you know, built quite a big home, waterfront, on the northern beaches in Seaforth, and he died 2 weeks after. And I can tell you, it made us extremely unhappy. So I knew at an age that, and it attracted too much attention. It attracted a lot of negative attention. And I would shy away from that. It would really, I actually used to find it quite embarrassing. For me, success is waking up in the morning and feeling happy. So basic. See, that's it. Happy. And you know, when I say that to people, a lot of people have criticized me over that one and said, well, you know, aren't you ambitious? Yeah, I am ambitious. Absolutely. I'm very ambitious. But I want to be happy. So I will never put myself in a position where I will not feel happiness. That's incredibly important to me. And I don't think, and money doesn't do it. And that, of course, we need a certain amount of money to be able to eat, to be able to travel when we can again, to be able to have a home. Of course, we need a certain amount of money. I don't need excess. I don't need to be wearing the designer bag and the designer clothes.
It really sounds like people are conflating the idea of success or ambition with competition.
That's what I think too. And again, it's because they're looking at the Joneses. And the thing is, when you do that, and I decided not to, where it actually was really obvious to me was when I became a mum. When I became a mum, I was in my late 30s and I had, gone to mother's group, and I found that quite confronting. More confronting than standing up in front of students at the University of Adelaide at 43.
In what way?
Well, because they were so competitive. My child's just had its first solids. My child just did its first whatever. You know, I just got these diamond earrings for the birth of my child. So it was just the whole thing, the whole conversation I found competitive. And it wasn't nurturing for me. And it wasn't stimulating me. And like I said, you know, and the thing is, if I'm excited about the next door neighbour's brand new Merc, that Merc in a year's time will end up being 1 year old. And then basically the benchmark keeps on changing when you use other people as your benchmark. But if you use yourself as the benchmark and the goalpost, you're in control.
So what's in that toolbox? Because it's not an easy thing to keep shifting the focus back around to how you feel when there's so many things out there trying to vie for your attention.
Okay, so in my toolbox I have, so this is my toolbox. So we're talking about the toolbox of my happiness?
Yes.
Okay, so my number one thing is for me to have nurturing, true relationships. And those relationships have to be based on my values. Another great book that articulated this to me was, I mean, I had naturally done this, but it wasn't until I read this book that I thought, yeah, okay, I've been doing this. The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F.
Yes. I've read that one too.
Okay. I have too.
Yeah. Okay. And the beauty about that one was, see how he talks about the values? So if I value you, Louise, but you value money.
Yeah.
That means when an opportunity arises, you in our relationship will throw me under the bus over money.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me start again. But I'm just saying, if you, Louise, value relationships and I value relationship, if you value my relationship and I value your relationship, then we're okay. We can be buddies forever.
Can I just ask, Daphne, are you psychic?
Yes.
Or is it a prophecy?
No, I don't believe in
just
that.
Just asking for a friend.
Actually, it's funny that, you know what, there's another story. I've scared many bosses with my powers of visualisation. That's another story. That's another story.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, but that's okay. But I have. It's funny because I used to visualize car spots all the time. I was a big nightclubber in my 20s and 30s before I married a non-dancer. Pardon? Go yeah, on. And I visualise car spots.
Car spots, yep.
And I'm perfect at it.
Car spot.
Oh, yeah, Andy, always. I'm telling you, I will take perfect. So then what? I think I was 34 that I thought, I need to use these powers of visualisation to something more substantial.
I don't know now why I'm not visualising car spots, because that seems like a really good idea.
Why
am I wasting time waiting for a car park?
Because I drive into the city and I'll say to my partner, we're going to get a great spot, and if I let him get into my head too much and say, no, no, don't be stupid, just go here, then the spot doesn't appear. But if I don't actually talk about the car space and I visualise it and I go where I intend to go, there's a car spot there.
Yeah, but you know what? That's exactly what you said about your partner, right? Okay, yeah. So if I've got somebody in the car that's negative,
yep.
I go, listen, I have been visualising this car spot, and, you know, in Sydney, they're very rare.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right? Clearly, I'm not finding a car spot. There's someone negative in here. I've got a non-believer in my car.
Get out. Go.
Get out of my car. You think I'm joking? I've done it. It's like, don't. And I warn people, listen, if you interrupt my visualization like sneezing, don't interrupt my sneezing. That's another one of those things that triggers me. It's because you get so much joy when you sneeze, right? And I remember there was one secretary years ago, she could see that I was putting my nose up towards the light so I can encourage this sneeze. And she ran in and put a finger on my nose. Anyway.
What? That's very intrusive.
Intrusive because it's 1/8 of an orgasm.
That's what I was going to say. I said to her, would you want me to come and interrupt your orgasm? Seriously. That's what I told her. I was so upset with that. Honestly, okay, especially to be able to do that in the middle of the day at work, what a bonus. Anyway.
Not even in break time.
Yeah, it wasn't in break time, but she went and stuck a finger underneath my nose. I'll never forget that.
It'll never happen again because of COVID, don't worry.
Thank God for that. That's terrible. Yeah, you're right, exactly. That was terrible. Anyway,
well, so you go to a separate room to do it. But anyway.
That's right, separate room. So with the car spots, so with the visualisation, there's. I know that sounds really like, you know, that's fine. But the thing is, it also from a brain perspective, it gives you time to relax. You see, so when you know that car spot's going to be there for you, you're all nice and calm, which means you're not rushing past a car spot, a car that's just about to leave. Do you see the reasoning behind it? I do believe in car spots work. And then, of course, at 34, I thought I need to start using this visualization for, you know, a partner. And that's when I sat down and wrote down the three values that I needed in a partner, and I visualized them. And then the following year, he appeared. We were singing at the opening ceremony of the Sydney Olympic Games.
Wow.
And we were in a choir. How cool is that?
I've told Louise about this technique that I use several times now called script writing, and it's not writing movies. It's actually writing out the future as if it's already happened.
And I believe in that too.
It's values-based, and I learned it from somebody years ago in a seminar that I did, and when I actually put my mind to it, 90% of the stuff will actually manifest.
Absolutely, but I believe that. I say, when I was studying my science degree, I was visualising standing in front of marketeers and you know, as a marketeer.
So from a scientific chemist point of view here, what's the process that's going on in the brain? Do you know I'm certain you know the answer.
So what's happening
when you visualize, that is turning that kind of thought pattern, that energy, into a manifestation.
Yes, it doesn't mean to say, so this is why, so it's like, again, you know, I'm going back to ancient Greek philosophies again, but there's a Greek philosophy that basically says you visualize it, but you have to do it too. You have to plan for it too, right? So it's not just a matter of me visualizing getting a science degree and then going out dancing on podiums and bar tops in the cross, which yeah. I did do, but I also studied, right? So it's not a matter of not making the effort. It's because because the brain doesn't know the difference between reality and what you tell it. So as a chemist, I knew that I wouldn't be stuck in a lab because I'm an extrovert, but I had committed, and this is one thing where my mother was quite strict with. She's like, you've committed to this degree, you have to finish it. So we're very much into commitment. If you say you're going to a party and you get a better offer, you've still got to go to the party that you are RSVP'd at, right? So commitment is, your word is it. Word is gold. So when you're actually visualizing something, like a dancer, so at night when I'd go to sleep, I'd visualize my arm moves and my costume. And I'd visualise, because I always thought I was going to be a mermaid, and it wasn't until I was 16 that my mother said, you better give up on this dream. It's not going to happen.
It's not too late. There's still time, Daphne.
Okay. But I love, I just loved, like, the idea of being a mermaid and a dolphin. They were my two, like, I just loved that, right? And still, even now, my daughter's 17, if she's struggling to sleep, I'll sit down with her and I'll go, what colour is your mermaid tail? Let's see. I'm putting mine with pink sequins and purple sequins and maybe some red sequins. And, oh, where should we go to now? Let's go to Hawaii, she said to me last week. She's in year 12, right? So now we are pretending that we are mermaids and we're going off to Hawaii. So all that visualization does help reduce, again, cortisol. And again, like I said, not all cortisol is bad because you do need a bit of stress to be able to get moving, but it's how much stress.
Cortisol is also the hormone that's caused by, like, that's that fight and flight response, isn't it? Or the anxiety.
Yes, that's it. Exactly. That's it. So that's
what. The more in your life you have, the more cortisol you have, which is blocking that ability.
Okay. But it's also, it depends on what the situation is. So a little bit. So what I was listening to the other day was that, for example, procrastinators, which I'm not one of them, but procrastinators normally they leave things to the last minute because they need their body to produce enough stress to motivate them into action. Do you see? So yeah. You do need a bit of stress. So a little bit, like, you know, that performance anxiety before you're about to sing, before you're about to do a presentation, you get a little bit of stress. Too much stress where it becomes debilitating is a problem. Okay, that's when you go back to your breathing to reduce your breathing. But a little bit of stress isn't bad for you, because it gets the body into preparation for what's coming ahead.
How can you physically tell when you've hit peak cortisol and you need to back it back?
Well, you would tell, because cortisol, again, what I say to people, like when people talk about my, you know, my cream and how it's helping them with their eczema, even though it was designed for chafing, it wasn't designed for eczema. And I sit back and I think, okay, scientifically, I now understand why it's helping you. It's creating a soothing, long-lasting barrier. But because it's soothing for them and they're not itching, their brain now feels a sense of relief and calm, which then allows their skin to calm down too. Do you see? So cortisol, too much cortisol is bad, and you can actually see it through your skin, you know, eczema, acne, psoriasis. It's not just one thing. One pill, one cream will not help one specific skin condition. It's a holistic approach. It's not, and that's when it comes to, so when you can tell that your stress is too much is when it's debilitating, when it's keeping you up at night, when you're not getting any sleep, when you're being agitated or irritated, when you're depressed, when you feel that you can't move. That's when stress is too much. You can actually tell, like, I know that when I'm beginning to feel a bit anxious, I normally feel it in my stomach, and then I go, right, okay, lower your breathing. And, you know, I'll count to eight, and then I'll slowly breathe out to try and reduce my heart rate. So we can all tell, like, if we're mindful, we can tell when we're feeling a bit anxious, and then we go to our toolbox. So for my toolbox is, you know, my daily exercise keeps my stress levels down, my meditation, dancing, singing, knitting, creative. So I've got a toolbox of things that I do that I know, right, this is my time now where I need to reduce my stress levels. And, you know, and we all have to find the thing that works for them. Exercise has been scientifically proven to be sensational when it comes to reducing stress and producing happy hormones. And when you do what I do, which is every year I give myself, you know, at 50 I did a Spartan, did a Tough Mudder race. It was a 21-kilometer race. It was tough. I'm a dancer. I'm not a runner. You know, I prepared for that. I planned for that. They trained me to be able to do that. In the end, that exhilarated me. Yeah, that happened, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but I still, when I look at that photo, I pat myself on the back and think, that's pretty cool, Daph. Pretty cool that you did that, Daph. And bearing in mind, that was worse than uni, Andy, at 43, because I was 50 and they were in their 20s.
Oh, see, a lot of people would make that the thing that makes them not do it, not even consider it.
Yeah, you see, well, but they're stopping themselves from living their best life, you know, like, as in, I suppose the day that I rocked up, I got to say I did feel anxious because I looked around and thought, what am I doing here? I'm everybody's mother, right? So, and there was a guy on the stage and he was trying to rev everybody up to get everybody excited. And he picked me, and they were playing all the music that I used to spend all my life dancing to on podiums at DCM. And he picked me out of the crowd. But he didn't realise that I used to teach belly dancing, and belly dancing is my number one passion. So, of course, here I am on stage now and I'm having a great old time dancing with him. They're all, like, clapping away and having a great time. But for me, that reduced my stress straight away. I defaulted back to what I love, and that's to dance. And when I dance, it takes me into another zone, and then I forget what I'm doing. And it goes back to the Louise Hay book that I said before, which is feel the fear and do it anyway. You know, you don't take a look at your life and say, okay, if I don't achieve by the time I'm 25, I mean, that is such a waste of the next 85, 90 years. Yeah. If the average age is 86, 87 before we pass, then you can't expect to achieve everything in the first 25 years of your life, and then everything else is boring.
That'd be very busy, you know, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be very busy, but you wouldn't take a lot of pleasure out of it. No. I can't say to you, yeah, you know, I'm a mum and I have teenagers and that's all my life is about. No, it's not. Yes, I am a mum, but I'm more than just a mum. I'm more than just someone that's turning 55. I'm someone who gets excited about little things, like, you know, when I go past Mr. Lincoln Roses, and Adelaide's got the most beautiful rose gardens, I will stop and take pleasure in that. I will not go past jasmine, gardenias or Mr. Lincoln's and not stop. And I don't care who I'm having a conversation with, I will stop and take pleasure in the beautiful scent of a traditional English garden. And so if I can take joy out of the simple things, or watching the birds do their thing, butterflies and bees, I love bees with a passion as well. Gosh, I'm passionate about so many things, aren't I? but that keeps me happy, you see? And if that means that people think I'm silly, I don't care.
So I'm interested to know if you have, say, a magic recipe for succeeding at something new. So from what I'm getting from you, pick something that you actually want to do, be happy doing it, don't compare yourself to others.
That's it.
Is it as simple as that?
It's as simple as that. It's very simple. Pick something that you want to do, right? So if it's like, I always wanted to play piano, well, go and learn it. I always wanted to. And the thing is, brain neuroplasticity growth mindset, the science behind the brain, the past 10 years specifically, has shown that the brain is like Play-Doh. It responds to what you tell it. So basically, if you tell yourself you can't do it, the brain goes, oh, well, he can't do it. He can't do it.
Yep.
But if you say to yourself, I'm just about to do a presentation and I'm visualizing my posture now, I'm not crouched, I'm proud, I've visualized how my presentation is going to go, I'm watching my audience, they're excited about what I'm saying and I'm receiving that feedback. If you visualize that before it happens, and of course you've rehearsed it and planned it and practiced it and made sure and recorded yourself and made sure it was perfect, once you get on that stage and the brain thinks it's already done it. So you go up and you start. It's the first couple of minutes of a presentation that's freaky, or the first couple of minutes before an obstacle course that you think, okay, now I'm a bit freaked out. What am I doing here? I'm sitting here running in mud. And the guy that's on my back has just, you know, wet himself in the river. Right?
Yeah.
True story. JB, did you just weep on me? Oh, not on you right now, Daff. It's a true story. Not on you right now, Daff. Seriously, mate? Seriously? I'm older than your mother. Seriously? Seriously? It's a true story. He goes, no, I did it before. Because the team that I got joined wanted to win. I wanted a story.
No. Yes. At all costs.
I wanted to win. I wanted the adventure. Okay,
that you got, the thing well, you is, that.
But JB never told me that. He goes, oh, listen, I said to him, I listen, because I rock up. That's nothing, right? Remember how I said to you, you've got to believe, be in an environment where people believe in you? So I had joined this new gym. I had turned 50. He comes up to me and he says, we're doing a Tough Mudder team. Would you like to join? I say to him, I'm a dancer. I don't run. He goes, no. I can see how strong you are because I've done weight training for 31 years, right? How about you just join my team? You're funny and you're focused. Funny and focused doesn't get you through a 21-kilometre obstacle course race, by the way. Okay? So then I take a look at the other team and I've gone, what am I doing here? They're so competitive. Oh, my gosh. So there was a time where I felt overwhelmed thinking, what am I doing with all these psycho-competitive human beings? This guy trains the Seagulls, the Manly Seagulls. What's he doing with me? Right? But he kept on reminding me, you're funny and you're focused. You're funny and you're focused. And he had a program and I was trained. I was trained to it. So on the day, we won. We were the first team from, at the time I was part of Virgin Active, that won. And every time we ran past a drink break or a meal break, my team ran past each one. I'm like, hey, guys, what about a little bit of a break? Hey, guys. I'm not here to win. Oh, we are. why didn't you tell me that 4 months ago? You tell me that today, now. I'm stuck in here. And do you know what?
Would 5 years on,
would I have done if...
If you knew they were being competitive?
No. Nope. No way. No way. Because they want to win. I don't want to let them down. I'm the one that when they were doing netball at school and they were picking teams, it'd be like... Okay, I'm in teams now. Okay, right. Okay, are you goalkeeper? You blah, blah. Oh, listen, I had Daphne last week, okay? Right? I don't want Daphne again this week because, you know, hand-eye coordination. So I remember that feeling as a student thinking, wow, you know what? I'm really not competitive. Mm. So if I knew they were that fiercely competitive, I wouldn't have done it with them. So it is picking the right environment. But where I was lucky was that JB saw something in me that I couldn't see. And he didn't let on. Like, he didn't tell me that he was there to win. Mm. And at the time, I didn't realise that he was, you know, one of the coaches to the Manly Seagulls, did I? But since then, we've done Spartan races together. We've done Raw Challenge. Every year he sets up, you know, different things for us to do. And I'm still training with him.
Are they still competitive in that training that you're doing?
Oh, they'll never change. They will never change. They are competitive. But the thing is, we're friends now. We all go out. And we all are, like, a very tight-knit group. But the thing is that they're still who they are. They didn't change. I'm still who I am. I haven't changed. And we have fun. So I think, so in the end, even though they are super competitive, it means that my fitness level is higher than what it would be if I weren't part of their team. Mm. Do you see? So that's what's happened. And the other thing is that that's important is that, and I try to say this to my kids, when I was doing my Master of Business in Marketing, I made sure that I picked teams that my weaknesses were their strengths.
Yeah.
Do you see? So my weaknesses were their strengths and I could learn from them. Now, the other thing is when we talk about keys to success, it's not being arrogant. I'm not proud and that is critical. So I guess I'm not competitive. I'm not benching. I'm competitive against me, against my goalpost, against my benchmark. I'm not competitive against you. I don't care what you do, right, as long as you don't affect my mental health. But I think the other thing is I'm not arrogant. I'm not proud. So if someone says to me, this is how you can improve, Daphne, then I will take it on board. I'm a good student.
Yeah.
And that's why when I formed my team, I formed a team based on my weaknesses so I could learn from them. And so that's what I do. So I am the weaker link in that team. They don't mind. Oh, my fitness level is higher because I need to at least keep up with them.
Now, that's a reframe in itself. I heard you say you're the weakest link in the team and they don't mind.
I don't care.
And well, normally the phrase goes, a team is only as strong as its weakest link. So that's very different to what's happening in your team.
I suppose they probably wouldn't pick me if they were doing this professionally, but I think clearly they get something out of me.
I think they get the attitude out of you.
That's it.
I think they do. I think they're getting a lot more out of it than you know.
Yeah, you're there motivating them whether they know it or not to be the best version of themselves.
When a trainer is trying to correct your move, a lot of people don't like that, whereas I don't mind. If you're there and you're focused on correcting my deadlift, then how clever am I? So it means that I'm getting a little bit more attention, but then I'm improving on my technique. And it's maybe also the trainers can see that it doesn't bother me when I'm being corrected. And then I laugh at myself, right? I think it's really funny when I finally do it. Like me doing the rings last night, I was giggling all the way. When my legs were up there in the ceiling while my arms were in the rings, I thought, this is so hilarious. Meanwhile, my core is like switched on so I don't fall. So I do have, it's true, but I do. And I think taking the mickey out of me, it's fantastic. That's another thing I think. But if I had to add a recipe, it's not taking yourself seriously. I think a sense of humour is important. And when I look around me with people that I find that are going through trauma or grief, you know, life is challenging for all of us. No one's going to come out of this, you know, alive or scot-free. Everybody's got a cross to bear. So for me, it was, you know, my father passing in the middle of my HSC. To some of my other friends now, they're going through a divorce. They're going through separations. I can see other people losing their parents in their 90s and they're still feeling the same amount of grief as probably what I would have felt when I was 16. So every single one of us has got something to deal with. Mm. But at the end of the day, and pretending that everything's okay, well, I don't do that. I think it's a waste of energy. I'd rather be honest and then that way I can get through my grief faster. So I think pretending that something's not bothering him when he does, I think it actually causes long-term damage. So for me, a sense of humour is imperative. I think that if you can find humour in something somewhere, that's why, you know, comedians are some of my favourite performers. I love them because I think what they do for us is fantastic. You know, being able to laugh at something is just one of the biggest pleasures of life. So if I can keep on doing the rings and and laughing at me, I think that's just fantastic.
I'm 60 years old. I'm not really, but I'm 60 years old and I'm thinking about taking up piano. And I say, Daphne, I don't know whether to do this or not. I'm feeling a bit old.
I think I'm going to send your... I think you have to do it. You've got to do it right now. You get off this from me today and you sign up. It's never too late to learn. The scientists have proven this. It might take you a little bit longer than what it would have if you were 10, but because the brain doesn't stop learning, it might take you a little bit longer. But where the age actually benefits, and you find that one of the girls that I train with, she's 40 and she's a celloist, and she completed a 24-hour endurance race 2 weeks ago, and they won. That was phenomenal. 24-hour true grit, and she's 40. She said the beauty that we have, Daphne, is the discipline that comes with age. So your brain neuropathways might not be as agile as a 10-year-old trying to learn the piano, but you have the discipline of someone that's older. So it's not all that bad, you know?
What you lose in one area, you pick up in another.
Exactly. So when you take a look at holistically, because we are, you know, an ecosystem, we are Gaia, we are all interrelated. We try to separate things when we're actually a whole. So what I do today does impact my environment. And of course, Adelaide, South Australians have known this for a lot longer than the rest of us. But whatever I do today will impact you. Mm. So if I'm negative and toxic to you, you will be impacted. And the same goes with, we can't isolate things, whether it be skincare. You can't isolate the way you treat your skin, but then you sit back and you, you know, binge drink and treat your temple poorly, thinking that it's not going to affect your skin. Of course it's going to, right? Mm. So I think we have to look at ourselves holistically and see how we work within our own bodies and within the environment that we're placed in. So, of course, I say start the piano now. I say today.
Now. Now.
Right now. Because the thing is, I said this before, I'm not a procrastinator. I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable.
You know, a few years ago, Daphne commented on one of my posts on Instagram and I said something about how I was considering starting a science degree. And then she said, oh, you should go do this and start that. And I never did. And I've since thought, if I did it when Daphne told me to do it, I would have it by now.
Well, exactly.
There you go.
Well, do it now. You need to enroll. You do it now. Yeah, that's exactly right.
You're my representation of the answer to the question that I've had for a long time, which is what if I just didn't tell myself no?
Yeah, no. Mm. No, look, doesn't exist in my vocabulary. Yeah. When I die, on my tombstone, it'll say no regrets in flashing lights because I know that we're here for a short time, okay? We can't guarantee that tomorrow morning we're going to wake up. You don't know. You can't guarantee that. And like I said, it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel emotion. It's okay to cry. The year that my mother was diagnosed with dementia, I cried that whole year. Mm. And I did not contain it. I was in the middle of Woolies and it was winter and I'm crying. But you know when you're crying and you actually can't stop crying, where the tears are just running down your face? And they were collecting vouchers for the school because my kids were tiny. Mm-hmm. So I'm crying. I'm wearing a turtleneck and the turtleneck's beige and it's like changing colour now from all the tears on my neck and I'm putting the stuff down the conveyor belt and she's watching my face as her eyes are like welling up in tears watching me cry and I can see that I'm now causing her pain, right, because she can see my pain and I'm feeling bad at the same time because I'm now transferring my emotion to her because I can see that she's an empath like I am and she can see that I'm in pain. And in the end, she says, do you want any vouchers? I go, yeah. And normally they give you like 8. She gave me the whole roll. And then as I could hear the roll going, the whole roll. It was hilarious because she was trying to make me feel better. And I walk into the school with this whole roll of vouchers. They're like, and of course I'm laughing. By the end, when she gave me the roll, I just started to laugh. So here I'm crying because I can do this. I can cry and laugh at the same time.
Oh, that's a great story. I love that.
It's true. So basically, I didn't hold my grief. I was devastated that, you know, I was having to clean out her family home. Yeah. You know, the family home that my father had built. that he only lived in for 2 weeks and then he died, right? And here I'm cleaning out her home and she was a hoarder. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. It was extremely difficult and I had 2 young kids, but I didn't suppress my emotions. I allowed myself to cry. And at the same time, I did go to a counsellor, a wonderful human being, who gave me the tools to be able to set boundaries, to be able to help my grief. Because, when somebody is diagnosed with something like that, it is a slow death.
Yeah.
And the thing is, with grief, I've got to say, because I've had a few people say to me, actually a few people, I've had my kids say to me, don't you ever get over this, Mum? Like, these are young kids, like when they were 8. And I said to them, you don't get over grief. It's part of you. Yeah. I am who I am because of the grief.
You just learn to kind of fold it into your personality.
And you do. I'm not ashamed of talking about it. I talk about it. And I think where the cultural background does help to grief, actually given times in the Orthodox calendar to grief.
Yeah, so it's quite scheduled.
It's scheduled. Okay, so it's like, they do 40 days, they have 3 months, 6 months, and every year on his anniversary, we have a memorial service for my dad. And then people will come up to you and, they'll discuss it and they'll give you an opportunity to talk about it. So it's not seen as such a negative thing. It's not like, the person just died and we're not going to discuss him again.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? So I think with grief, you learn to live with it. And again, as long as whatever is happening in your life is not debilitating, that's when you need to get help. There's a lot of things that I have learnt from, going to counsellors and learning how to set boundaries. Mm. That was a big one for me. Setting boundaries was huge.
I love a good counsellor.
I love a good counsellor. Oh, my gosh.
Someone who'll listen to me talk for...
gosh. Well, the thing is, my counsellor actually gives us tools, and so that's what I absolutely adore, the tools to be able to say, right, there are certain situations that you will get anxious, Daphne. We're going to call them a fire drill. So if you're going into a family event where you think you may get anxious, think about it. Like in an hour and a half, if they start drinking and they start becoming toxic, what do? You leave. Do you see? So they're fire drills.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, I think that's fantastic.
Thanks for talking to us today.
It's been awesome.
Okay. We're so appreciative.
Next time on Reframe of Mind, we'll dig a little bit further into the uncomfortable territory of grief and family dynamics with Scientia Professor Joe Forgas, AM.
What I'm really mainly objecting to is the kind of ideologies which say you got to be a member of this group because of the accident of your birth. Nobody has to be a member of any group that they choose not to be. And trying to define and reduce people into a general group membership is the most terrible violation of individuality.
If you're concerned about yourself or someone you know, please seek professional advice and support. You can contact Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636 or at beyondblue.org.au.
Or you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14 or lifeline.org.au. More resources can be found on our website. We'd like to thank today's guests for sharing their personal stories and insights. For more information on any of the subjects, guests, or references used in this episode, please see our show notes or reframeofmind.com.au.
Reframe of Mind is a Welcome Change Media production.
Tired of ads crashing your comedy podcast party? Good news. Ad-free listening on Amazon Music is included with your Prime membership. Just head to amazon.com/adfreecomedy to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Enjoy thousands of Acast shows ad-free for Prime subscribers. Some shows may have ads.